This morning at Kriyas HaTorah, we heard the mitzvah of Ata Kisvu Lachem Es Hashira Hazos, mitzvah number Taryag, mitzvah number 613, for each person to write his own Sefer Torah. But the way the Torah expresses it is Kisvu Lachem Es Hashira Hazos. Write for yourselves this Shira, this song. The Torah is referred to as a Shira, as a song. Rav Shmuel Zavsky, at the Levaya of the Panovich Rav, said that the Torah is hinting to us here that the Torah itself has to be the Shira Sachayim of a Jew, the life song of a Jew, that the Torah has to be our life song. The Torah has to be the theme of our lives. The Torah has to be what guides us through life from the beginning to the end. Here we are doing a Seder Yemei Teshuva, coming up on Yom Kippur, and we're thinking about this idea called Teshuva, which means to come closer, to return, to come closer to who we are supposed to be, to come closer to what we are supposed to be, to get back to what we really are all about. And for this, we need role models. And as time goes on, the role models that we treasure so much, and by that I refer to the role models of people who were connected to that different world of before the war are diminishing and fading away. And the best thing we can do is to try to hold on to them, and if not to them, to hold on to their memories and to use them as a guide so that we can try to emulate them. Now, the truth is, on the one hand, we have to beware of role models from earlier generations, because Chazal tell us, already back in the times of the Gemara, in Harishonim Kemalachim, if early generations are to be considered malachim in our eyes, if they're angels in our eyes, then Anu Kibnei Adam, that we can view ourselves as people compared to them. But in Harishonim Kibnei Adam, if they are to be viewed as people by us, if they're human beings, then Anu Kachamora, we are like donkeys. We're not on the same level as they are. But on the other hand, Chazal also tell us, B'chol Yom V'Yom, every day a person has to ask himself, when will my actions, when will my deeds reach those of those early generations? It may be impossible, but we have to strive for it. And we need role models. We need modern-day role models. And many of you here in the shul knew my father, Zechron Olivracha, was Nifter this year, and had very, very beloved feelings for him, where you saw him, and you saw his love of Torah, you saw his love of mitzvos, you saw his love of Yiddishkeit, and he's somebody who you felt you could learn from. So I want to share some thoughts with you about this individual on this day of Shabbos Teshuva, at this time when we are reflecting on Teshuva, to think about his life, as distant in some ways as he is from us, because he does come from a different world. He came from that world across the ocean. And when I mean across the ocean, I just don't mean across the Atlantic, but of course, that ocean of tears known as the Holocaust, and from that different world that was destroyed by the Holocaust. But the fact is that world was supposed to be our world, and we have a responsibility to try to rebuild it. And the survivors that we know, or the survivors that we knew, are our link to that world, and are our link to what that world stood for, and what that world acted like, and to give us an example, to give us ideas about how we can improve ourselves and try as much as possible to reconstruct that world. My father, Zechron Avracha, was a frequent visitor to our shul. And I know that many of you remember him with his Sefer Torah that we learn from every single Shabbat. It's a Sefer Torah that my parents had written, Le'ilu Nishmas, their parents who perished in the Holocaust. And it was a Sefer Torah that was very, very dear to him. And you saw how precious it was to him when he danced with it, as Simchas Torah, or in the later years when he simply held it as he sat and everybody danced around him. And perhaps you can use that Sefer Torah as lesson number one in terms of priorities and in terms of how we prioritize our lives, because my father never owned a square foot of real estate, but yet he had the money to write a Sefer Torah. Many people save their mitzvahs for last, but my father always lived in an apartment. My mother still lives in the apartment that I grew up in, rented from the time I was a year old for the last 59 years or so. And yet, the Sefer Torah they wrote, because that was an important thing for him, and it was a goal for him, and it was something of a triumph for him when he was able to finally fulfill that mitzvah. And the reason why it was so important to him is not because it's a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah, but it was also because Torah was a guide to his life. Most people are complicated. And by complicated here, I mean they're complex. They're made up of numerous parts. There are different components to their lives. There's the work that they do, their professional lives, their home life. There's their parenting, and there's their role as a spouse, and interaction with relatives, interaction with from people, interactions with non-from people. And they're different people in every situation sometimes. And they have to ask themselves, which one really is me? What defines you? Who are you really? Will the real you please stand up? I'm fond of sharing a vort in the name, which I heard from, many of us heard this from a friend many years ago, in the name of Rav Ruda Mezatzal, where he quotes the Gemara, quotes Rav Yosef as saying, Ilav Hayomer, Rav Yosef is speaking about the day of Matan Torah, the day when the Torah was given on Shavuos, and he says, Ilav Hayomer, if not for this day, Kama Yosi Ika B'Shukah. How many Yosis would be out there in the Shuk? And simply understood, he's expressing his appreciation to Torah because Torahs are making special. If not for the Torah, he'd just be another Yossi, another Joe in the marketplace. But Torahs would have made him special. But Rav Ruderman said it means something else. It means exactly what I pointed out. We have all these different pieces to our lives, and very often those pieces conflict with each other, and we're not really sure who the real me is. Along comes Torah, he says, Ilav Hayom, if not for this day, Kami Yossi Ika B'Shukah, I myself would be many different Yossis. I mean, the Yossis at home, and the Yossi at work, and the Yossi in the marketplace, and I act differently, and I have different values that I bring to each one, and I'm not necessarily the same person in one place as I am in the other. Along comes Torah, and it brings all the pieces of my life together, and it brings all the pieces of my life into harmony with each other. And if I don't bring them into harmony under Torah, if they in fact conflict with each other, then something is wrong, because Torah has to bring it all together. And my father was no different. He had many facets and many aspects to him, although those aspects may be different and more interesting than they are for the average person. He had a fascination with history. He had a fascination with languages. He taught himself some Latin by reading a Latin-Hungarian dictionary as a teenager. He taught himself some English by reading some Shakespeare, and actually when he came to America, he thought he knew some English. That didn't work out so well, but eventually learned how to speak English properly. He had a tremendous love of books. And he was a publisher. He's a publisher of scholarly Judaica. And he had his first love and his main love, and that was Torah. Among other loves, such as his love of Eretz Yisrael, his love of community, how do you deal with all of this? Some people thought, with all of these interests, he must, in fact, have trouble keeping it all together. And he must be a little bit conflicted. It could have been further from the truth. When push comes to shove, and you have to ask yourself, who are you? He was the person who would have said, Ilav Hayom Kamet, Shmuel Abbas Ika B'Shukah. I would be so many different people, but Torah has brought me all together. As a young yeshiva bacher, my father owned one of the great yeshivas in Hungary. For those who know Hungarian yeshivas, know about the Galanta Yeshiva. The Galanta Yeshiva was a yeshiva in Hungary led by the great Gadol Rav Yeshua Buchsbaum Zatzal Hashem Yinkam Demo. I never saw his Rebbe because he perished in the Holocaust. But I learned from my father what it meant to have one, because those 2 years in yeshiva and the time that he spent learning in yeshiva and the time that he spent learning under his Rebbe defined it for life. It was a picture that he always had in front of him, and it was a picture that he had on the wall. As a matter of fact, in the last weeks of his life, when he was very, very sick and really was not conscious 98% of the time, very difficult to get him to open his eyes, very difficult to wake him up, a picture of his Rebbe appeared in Hamadiyah magazine, in the Inni magazine of the Hamadiyah newspaper. And my son brought it to him. And I said to him, I said, Ta, we have a new picture of the Rebbe, a new picture of the Galanta Rav. He opened his eyes. He opened his eyes, and he kissed the picture, and he closed his eyes again. That was his relation with his Rebbe. Again, he only learned there for 2 years. But it was the last 2 years the yeshiva was open until it was shut down by the Nazis. He learned there, and he was always the Galanta Yeshiva Bachur. It was the way he thought. It was his mirrors that he sang on Shabbos, and it was the Torah that he learned that was animated by those years in yeshiva. And so he always viewed himself as a yeshiva bachur, and he always viewed himself as someone who has a responsibility not just to learn, but to live a life of Torah, to live a life of halacha without compromise. In his younger years already, he did not shave when he went to work. on Chol Moed and during Sfira. Now you may say that's no big deal. Many people do that today, but you have to know what it was like in the 1950s when everybody looked the same. Everybody was clean shaven. No one had facial hair except for maybe a mustache, and everyone wore a hat. Everyone looked kind of the same, but my father didn't shave, even if it meant that boys on the train on the way to work would make fun of him and say he looks like a monkey because he's not shaven. But there are things you don't compromise because a Jew has to do what he's supposed to do. You don't say it's a Chil Hashem. On the contrary, if you're doing the right thing, then it's a Kiddush Hashem, not a Chil Hashem. He was someone who was passionate about the chinuch of his children. You know, he came to America as a quote-unquote greenhorn, and it would have made perfect sense for him to let others take over and do whatever others are doing. But he very early on got involved. He got involved with the chinuch of his daughters, getting involved in the Beis Yaakov Borough Park. As a matter of fact, a video surfaced recently, which I have not seen yet, but I'm hoping to get to see it soon, of the groundbreaking for the Beis Yaakov of Borough Park. I don't know exactly what year that was, but it was many years ago, where he's in the video together with Aaron Cutler. So we know Aaron Cutler was still alive, Aaron Cutler was there, and he was there as well as a layperson who was involved, who was on the Vada Chinuch of Beis Yaakov. When it came to my chinuch, he wanted very much for me to have the kind of chinuch that he had, a Hungarian non-Hasidic chinuch, and he helped establish yeshiva based Yehuda and Borough Park, which basically lasted for the years that I was there under the Debrecina Rav, and I was very proud of the fact that my father was involved with the yeshiva and someone who's had an important position on the Vada Chinuch there as well. He was very into this. He was very into the schools that his children went to and to be involved in building those schools. But at the same time, he didn't believe in outsourcing the chinuch to the schools and recognized that he, as a father, has a responsibility to mechanech, to educate his children at home as well. He would learn with us. He would challenge us to learn new things. I remember at one point, I don't know how old I was, when he wanted me to memorize all the parashiyos of the Chamisha Chumshi Torah, and he offered me a prize. And at that time, it seems that the coolest thing a kid could have, some of us may remember this, are label makers, that these little things that you can print labels with on these plastic peel-off pieces of plastic. For some reason, that was an exciting thing for kids in those days, and he promised me I would get a label maker if I memorized all the Chamisha Chumshi Torah. So, however it is, and in whatever capacity we as parents have to be involved with our children, involved with our children's schools, and involved with what our children are learning, and involved with what our children are learning, not just in school, but out of school as well. He role modeled for us his values. His Sfarim were front and center. I was always proud as a child that my father had a wall full of Sfarim in his study. Now today, that's not such a big deal. Every bar mitzvah boy already immediately has a wall full of Sfarim, bookcases full of Sfarim. But in those days when people didn't have money, and Sfarim were expensive, and people really had to pick what is it that they spend their money on, just like he spent his money later on buying a Sefer Torah, he spent money on Sfarim and left a beautiful collection of Sfarim. And while he had other books as well, secular books, mostly of a nonfiction nature, the secular books were kept in a separate place, in a separate bookcase. And the Sfarim were the ones that he built a beautiful bookcase for and that he was most proud of. But even more importantly, it was those Sfarim that he learned in every Sefer that was in that bookcase, in those bookcases, he was intimately familiar with. And just about all of them have notes in them, either notes of thoughts that he had to contribute to what the author of the Sefer says, or simply to make a correction to a printing error, to a typographical error, because he was very concerned about that, of not having Sfarim with mistakes in them. And whenever he found a mistake, and there are many mistakes, particularly in the oldest Sfarim, then there'd be a little line over the word that is misspelled with the correct spelling of the correct word written onto the side of it. So he learned his Sfarim, he learned, and he didn't discriminate in his learning. He learned Gemara, and his Shas is full of Chidushei Torah, but he learned also Jewish philosophy, and he learned Tanakh. He loved Tanakh, and he knew Tanakh literally from front to back. He was able to quote it, and he was familiar with all of it intimately. Because this is who he was. It was the value that he had, and we as children saw that. We saw that in the way he treated his family. We saw that in the way he would spend all of his free time learning. And with all of his greatness, in Torah learning, and he really was a huge, huge, outstanding Talmid Chacham. He's also extremely modest. Many of you tried calling him Rabbi Gross on his visit to Chicago, and if you did, he corrected you. It's not Rabbi Gross, it's Mitzvah Gross. He may know a lot of Torah, but he did not have formal smicha, and he did not serve as a Rav of a shul, and therefore he's Mr., not Rabbi. The shul that my parents davened in for many years recently, after my father passed away, honored his memory at their annual dinner just a few months ago. And it's kind of like a Hasidish shtibel, Hasidish shul. So when they sent in the invitation, they had actually asked me to speak. So when they noted in the invitation that I'm speaking, they grossly exaggerated the positions that I have here in Chicago. I became Harav, Hagon, and Av Beis Din, and Ram, Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know what else they wrote there. And I'm sure my mother loved it, but it was grossly exaggerated. For my father, they referred to him as Harav HaGadol. And when I spoke, I corrected that. Because he would have been, number one, he would have been very upset if he would see that. And in that sense, it's a good thing that he wasn't there. But I feel there's another important reason why it should not refer to him as Rav HaGadol, and why we should not refer to him as Rabbi Gross, but Mr. Gross. Because if we refer to somebody who learns Torah as a rabbi just because he learns Torah, we're suggesting that anyone who's not a rabbi, anyone who's just a mister, does not have responsibility to learn and is unable to learn and unable to achieve greatness in learning. And what my father taught us and teaches all of you is that even though he was a balabas, he was not a rav, he was not a rosh yeshiva, he was a balabas. That means he was a layperson. He was a mister. That a mister also has to learn. And a mister also has to aspire for greatness in learning. And a mister should also feel that he has a chelik in Torah that belongs to him, and that the more he learns, the greater he can become. An important lesson, an important value that unfortunately is being lost in our time, in our generation, where anybody who spent a little bit of time in yeshiva immediately feels he has to call himself rabbi, no matter what he's doing with his life. He also, in terms of his modesty, was a role model for the idea that you don't have to wear your frum kite on your sleeve. And it's not the superficial things that count. You don't have to wear your frum kite on your sleeve. You don't have to wear your frum kite behind your ears. A gray hat is fine. Long pace and unnecessary, color shirts are okay, and it's still possible and still really important to learn Torah and to know every single sefer in your vast collection. When one of my sons was a young yeshiva bachur, he began to entertain the idea of wearing a gartel. He knew that we had some Hasidic blood in our family history, and therefore he thought maybe he should wear a gartel in order to express something that he was feeling at that time. So he asked me about it, and I told him immediately, why don't you ask Zaidi? My father did not respond to him immediately. Instead, my father wrote to him what in his beautiful Hebrew writing wound up being a 5-page tshuva about the issue of whether or not he should wear a gartel. And I just want to share a few lines and one paragraph with you, because really it's very lengthy and worthwhile for somebody to study line by line and word by word. Al Nachti Ahuvi, Habachur HaChashiv, to my precious grandson, Habachur HaChashiv, the Chashiv Bachur, and he calls him by name. Sha'alta Nachti Ahuvi, my precious grandson, you asked me, as Chavis Da'ati, my opinion, Beni Masharachash Levavcha HaTor, in regard to the fact that your pure heart motivates you for a Devar Tov, something good, like Kabbal Atzvacha Minach Hasidim, to accept upon yourself the Hasidish Minach Lach or Ezer, the Shasat Fil, in order to wear a gartel, that is to wear a gartel during davening. I have no doubt that your intentions are good. And anyone who knows Sefer Kuzari knows this is paraphrasing from the Kuzari. Amnam, imzer ro'i v'ratzi galamasa, should this be what you actually do, that requires further examination. And he goes on to examine the issue from several angles, each one dealt with at length. One of them being mitzad halacha. Is that halacha required to wear a gartel? And going through the sources saying that even though Hasidim accepted upon us to wear a gartel, it's not halachically required. Number two, minhag hamishpachis. He talks about the family minhag. And here I'll just quote briefly from it. Speaking about family minhag, he speaks about his own father, who did not have, even though coming from Hasidic stock, did not wear Hasidic lavush. And he says, "Kimitivel haya hatznei aleches," because his father, my grandfather, was naturally hatznei aleches, a modest person, pashtan b'chol halichosav, a simple person in all of his activities. He was a sophisticated businessman, but he was simple in the way he expressed himself. And he says about himself, my father writes about himself, "Gam ani holech b'ikvos avi zechrono levracha." I also go in the footsteps of my father, the snag b'pashtas, to conduct myself with pashtas, with simplicity, below ginunim chitoniim, without any expression or external trappings. That the third thing he considers is chinuch, mitzad hachinuch, and I'll get back to that momentarily. Then it goes to mitzad hanimus. What is the proper thing? Nimus means in terms of what's the etiquette thing to do. What's the respectful thing to do? Because as he goes on to speak in detail, that if you're learning the yeshiva, that's not chassidish, and your rabbeim don't wear a gartel, and then he goes on to say, and your father doesn't wear one, then is that derech eretz for you to take this upon yourself? And then he has a fifth consideration, which is too lengthy to talk about now. But I do want to go back and quote for you this one paragraph about chinuch. And he says as follows, "Kidulach, as you know well, lamariti b'shivas ad mor hagon akadosh b'shua buksbam. You know very well that I learned in the yeshiva of Shur Buxbaum, Av Bez and Galanta, Zechat Tzad of Kodesh of Rocha, Hashem Yen Kambilu, who was a gadol, she gadol b'chassidus, a gadol b'chassidus, b'chazos nevertheless, even though he's chassidish, but he's Rav of an Ashkenazi community, so he says, therefore, lo shina davam im enhagi Ashkenaz, he didn't deviate from the Ashkenaz enhagim as far as anybody could see. And he goes on to say here on the Beis Medrash of the yeshiva, we daven nesach Ashkenaz, even though everybody knew, that the Rebbe davened as a harif for himself. V'lo rak shelo tava mitalmidav. Not only did he not demand of his talmidim, shekabal al atzam and hagi chasidim, that they should accept upon themselves chasidish min hagim, el shelo hayinichalo, he would not be happy, kasharah she talmid tzair, when he saw a young talmid, she'od lo hagia le'izim adrega b'limudim, who had not yet reached any real level of learning, for achoge chagur b'tfil is already wearing a gartel. V'yivyeh is like his snag do so. He expressed his opposition to this. V'amar and said, "Shenoig sheminag shemekabel echad al atzma bekalus, a minag that you take on without too much thought, you take on too easily. Yazavos bekalus ki abandoned or will be abandoned easily as well." But Da'ato Haisa's opinion was that lifnishim mekabel minhagim chasidus, before you accept chasidish minhagim, tzichem lirchosh yidius b'tor b'chlal, you have to amass knowledge of Torah in general, b'tor zachidus b'frat, and the Torah of Chassidus specifically. And even though, he goes on to say, he had tremendous nachas from those Talmidim who eventually reached that level, nevertheless, this is not something that he pushed at all. He didn't push it because he felt that it had to come at the right time in the right place. And the Ein Kol Erech, he concludes, because he felt, Ein Kol Erech, there is no value, the Chitzonius Chassidus, for external expressions of Chassidus, B'li HaPnimius, if there's no pnimius, there's no depth or essence to it. And I think these are powerful words coming from, first of all, a grandfather to a grandson, who maybe now feels a little bit silly for the idea at this point in his life as an adult that he ever entertained that gartel idea, but who got the gift of a lifetime to get such a thought-out tshuva from his grandfather. But also the nuance that we see over here from my father and from his Rebbe. The idea that, you know, if we think about it, today we live in a monkey-see, monkey-do world, where everybody's doing what they're doing because that's what everybody else is doing. Someone else wears a black hat, I wear a black hat. Someone else wears white shirts, I wear white shirts. Someone else dresses like this, I dress like this. And there's a lot of emphasis on the superficial stuff where oftentimes there is no pnimis, there is no essence to it. This is not chasidus to criticize any of these practices that I just mentioned, whether wearing a hat or white shirt or whatever the case may be. There are times and places that are called for a variety of reasons, panemius and otherwise. But the question is, do we ask ourselves, why are we doing it? Do we think about it? Do we consider it? Is there some deeper thought behind it, or is it just the superficial idea of doing what everybody else is doing? And of course, to once again emphasize the idea of simplicity, that not everything has to be expressed externally in superficial ways. My father, the Zichrono Livracha, had a tremendous love of mitzvos. Mitzvos for him were not a burden. davening for him was not something to be rushed through. I never saw him rush through a Shimon Esrei. He was always one of the last people to leave shul. And when he left shul, he always sat down again before leaving shul. When he searched for an esrog, he took pleasure in searching for an esrog. When he built his sukkah, it wasn't with a kvetch, but he loved building the sukkah and loved putting the schach on the sukkah. We have to ask ourselves, are our mitzvahs a burden or are mitzvahs a pleasure? How enthusiastically do we do mitzvahs? He was fond of saying a vort, which I don't think is his own, that when Aaron HaKohen gets the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the base of Mikdash, the pasuk says, "Vayas Kain Aharon." Aaron did Kain. He did so. He did as he was told. And Rashi says, "Malame the teachers of Shaloshina." They didn't deviate. And it sounds like what the Torah is doing is complimenting Aaron for not deviating from what Hashem told him to do, which is a little bit difficult to understand. Can we imagine someone deviating from what Hashem tells him to do? Can we imagine Aaron a Kohen deviating from what Hashem tells him to do and to do the mitzvah differently? That you're telling me to do the mitzvah this way, and he'll say, "I don't think so. I think it should be done differently." So the word goes is, of course, Aaron was going to do what Hashem told him to do. But Shloshina, he didn't change. He didn't change, not that he didn't change from what Hashem told him to do. He didn't change in his enthusiasm. It was a mitzvah that he had to do every single day. We can imagine how excited Aaron was to light the menorah on the first day in the Mishkan. But what about the second day? What about the third day? What about the 100th day? What about the 1,000th day? Would he still do with the same enthusiasm? So Yaschein Aharon, my father would say this at the bar mitzvahs of his children, grandchildren in particular, that you're putting on tefillin, challenges to do this mitzvah with as much excitement, much enthusiasm in the years to come as you have with this mitzvah. He himself had love for all mitzvahs, but he had a special love for the mitzvah and for the tefillin that he wore. Many of you know this story from the Shiva. I shared this many times over the one day of Shiva that I sat here in Chicago, that after my father's nifter, right after his nifter, we, without getting into details, managed to discover a box that he left. And the box had written on it in Hebrew, Achamev Esm Shana, after 120 years, after my 120 years are up. And he gave instructions of what was in the box and how he wanted to be buried with the items in the box. And amongst those items were the talis that he got married in. He wanted to be buried in that talis. The siddur that his father gave him, that was in tatters now, his father gave him a siddur as he left home to go to the Hungarian Nazi labor camp that he was drafted into while his parents were herded into the ghetto and eventually perished in Auschwitz. So his father gave him a siddur, and he used that siddur through all the difficult times. And the tefillin that his father gave him in the tefillin bag that his mother made for him at his bar mitzvah, which he kept with him throughout the war, throughout the labor camp, throughout his escape from the labor camp, throughout the time that he was in hiding. He held on to the tefillin, put on tefillin every single day. And those tefillin were very, very precious to him. Eventually, they were no longer wearable, but he saved them, and he asked that to be buried together with those tefillin, which had to be put in Geniza, of course. So I think there's a lot to learn from these instructions. One of them is to see his attachment to mitzvahs and his love of mitzvahs and how much he used them to define his life and who he was. But also, you see another important thing. Chazal tell us, Shuv Yom Echad Kodem Yisaschem. You're supposed to do tshuva the day before you die. And we know, the Gemara asks, we don't know when we're going to die. So the Gemara answers, so how much more do you have to do tshuva every single day? My father did not prepare this box when he was 90 years old. He was zochah to live till he was 96. I don't know exactly when he prepared it. It's the one thing that he wrote that is not dated. He dated everything that he wrote. But he definitely wrote it when he was younger, well before he passed away. But he wasn't afraid of the idea that he wasn't going to live forever. And he thought about it, and he thought about what he wanted to be buried with. These are just some ideas of many that we can learn from my father, Zichron Olivracha. The idea of love of mitzvot, the idea of love of Torah, the idea of love of Mesorah, treasuring our status as Ovdei Hashem, as servants of Hashem, and to live a life that is considered, to live a life that is thought out, to live a life that is nuanced, to live a life that we live it because we mean to live it, not just because we're doing what we are used to doing, or not just because we're doing what everybody else is doing. The Mishnah tells us that child is like a blank piece of paper, and as we grow, we are filling in that paper. We need to be aware that we're all writing a book. We're writing the Shiras HaChaim of our lives with the lives that we live. And to the degree that we live that life according to Torah, our Shiras HaChaim becomes the Torah itself. So we need to think about that in these days of tshuva, to think about what our lives are really all about, to figure out which piece of our lives really defines us, to make sure that it's ultimately the Torah that brings all of the pieces together, and to make sure that the life that we live is not just the life that we want to live in the moment, but the life that we want to have lived when all is said and done, so that it will be one that we can be proud of. Yizkor Baruch.